Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about private prosecutions. This is our part two on this subject, so please do listen to our part one podcast. I am joined by barrister Nick Hawkins from Normanton Chambers in London. Nick is a specialist barrister in private prosecution work, and he is also the former chief crown prosecutor of CPS Direct. Nick is a member of the Private Prosecutors Association and the Association of Regulatory and Disciplinary Lawyers. Thank you very much for joining us, Nick.
Thanks for having me back, Hattie.
A pleasure, as always. Okay, so let's tell our listeners, what did we discuss in part one? And I'm just going to give our listeners the headline questions that we discussed. So if anybody says, oh, I'd like to know a little bit more about that, they can go back to part one podcast and they can pick up on these questions in our conversation that we had. So in part one, we discussed what is meant by a private prosecution, who normally prosecutes offences, why should I consider bringing a private prosecution action? And if I start a private prosecution, can anyone stop me from doing so other than the court? If the police have investigated a case and they or the CPS decide not to proceed with bringing legal action against the potential offender, can I still go ahead with the private prosecution? And the last question that we discussed was, if I'm successful, can I get compensation? So I was just saying to you, Nick, wasn't I, before we pressed record on this podcast, that private prosecution is not something I have to say that I knew much about until, you know, in my recent years of running my law firm. And I don't think it's something that lots and lots of people sort of know as a common area of law. So I'm really pleased to be recording part two of our part one podcast. So let's start with our first question. And what we're going to be discussing is, what is the role of the Crown Prosecution Service in private prosecutions? So what is the role of CPS in private prosecutions?
Well, you're right to say that most people know very little about private prosecutions, because most of us think that the police investigate crime and the Crown Prosecution Service prosecute it. But of course,
and you think that's it.
Exactly. That's what people think. But in fact, as we discussed in part one, any individual can start a private prosecution if they think they've got a reasonable case. The role of the Crown Prosecution Service in private prosecutions kicks in three ways. The first is they may do absolutely nothing, because they won't ordinarily be informed about the case. The private prosecution will go on in the same way that, say, a prosecution from the Health and Safety Executive would go on without the CPS knowing about it. But either party, the person bringing the prosecution or the prospective defendant, can write to the Crown Prosecution Service asking them to take over the prosecution. Well, if you are the prosecutor, the advantage of the CPS taking over the prosecution is they then pick up the costs and the burden of proving the case.
Yes.
If
yes.
you are the defendant, you might write to the Crown Prosecution Service and say, there isn't any evidence at all here. Please take the case over and stop it. Discontinue it.
Yes. That's interesting, isn't it? I think that's very interesting. And I just want to just break that down a little bit. So what we're saying is, even if a private prosecution has started, whether you are the defendant in a private prosecution or you're the person that's the applicant making the private prosecution, you could both at any stage independently, obviously, of each other, because you're independent parties, contact the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, and say take over for the various reasons that you've outlined. So if you're a defendant, somebody has brought a private prosecution against you, you could contact the CPS and say, look, this has been brought against me. I want you to step in and look at it and stop it. Have it struck out. There's no evidence. Here's why. Help me with this. And if you're the applicant, the person bringing the private prosecution, you can say to the CPS, I've now gone 25% of the way or 50% of the way. Is that right? And I can contact the CPS and say, can you now take over and can you continue?
Yes, both parties can. And of course, the CPS have the option of declining to take on the prosecution.
Yes, there's always that.
And just letting it run its course. But certainly in my time as a Chief Crown Prosecutor, and I did 15 years in the role, I had letters from private prosecutors asking me to take it over on their behalf. And I had many letters saying, please stop this. So wow. The CPS have quite a lot of dealings with private prosecutions. And indeed, if you go on their website, there's a section of their legal guidance devoted to private prosecutions that sets out what their approach will be.
Wow. I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, but again, I think it's important to say, only because we touched on this in part one, say you go to the CPS as the applicant and you say, look, I'm bringing this private prosecution. I've now either started it or I'm a fair way down the line. Can you take over? If the CPS say no, it doesn't mean that you can't continue, does it, Nick? You can still continue?
Yes, you can continue. And till such time as either the CPS take it over and stop it, or until a magistrate or judge says there's no evidence and stops it. So right. The fact that somebody has approached the CPS doesn't mean that the CPS's decision will be final. As I said, the CPS's decision may well be, if you want to bring a private prosecution, you carry on. We're not going to get involved.
Yes, absolutely. Well, one of the reasons, as we again outlined in part one, that you may be bringing a private prosecution yourself is because the CPS has said they won't do it, or they've done it and they've not been successful, and there's new evidence, there's new information, and you have the money, you have the time, you have the legal support, because I definitely think there should be access to legal advice in this area. I don't think it's something that people should sort of take lightly in deciding as to whether they will get legal help or not. You can go ahead and continue. So let's talk about, what is the Private Prosecutors Association? What is that? I didn't even know they existed. So you can tell us who they are and what it is.
Well, it's a very new organisation founded in the last couple of years. And it's a group of like-minded people who want to ensure that private prosecutions are conducted professionally and ethically. One of the things that's interesting about the Private Prosecutors Association is it covers everything from prosecutors looking at crimes against major corporations, big financial crimes, to prosecutors who deal with individuals who perhaps want to bring a prosecution against their neighbour. The second thing that's very unusual about the Private Prosecutors Association is not only does it include both solicitors and barristers, but it's also open to investigators, forensic accountants, people who are involved in the gathering of evidence in support of private prosecutions. So it's quite a wide-ranging body. It provides training for members, it provides an opportunity for exchange of information, and it has recently developed a code for private prosecutors, which I think is a really important step.
So just before we talk about what that code is, because I think that's quite important to understand that, as Joe Public, as an individual, can you go to the Private Prosecutors Association to get information, perhaps find a lawyer, a solicitor or a barrister that's registered with them? What help can they give the public? Is there anything there?
Well, at the moment, the website gives a lot of information, but last time I looked, it didn't have a directory of find a lawyer.
Right.
What I would say to anybody listening to this podcast is that if you are considering bringing a private prosecution, and if you go to either a solicitor or a barrister, I'd very strongly advise that you ask the question, are you a member of the Private Prosecutors Association? Because it's not an organization you can just join. It's an organization that checks that you have credentials to become a member, that you've got experience of private prosecutions. So if you were advised by someone who is a member of the Private Prosecutors Association, you've got some reassurance that they have experience in the field. And the other thing that we all have to sign up to as members of the association is that we will act in accordance with the code, which is effectively our ethical code as to how we will behave with regard to private prosecutions.
Okay, so let's talk about their code of practice. Tell us in a nutshell then, Nick, what is the code of practice? And I know it's never, nothing is ever fitting in a nutshell when it comes to the law, but let's try and get this one into that kind of category. What's the code of practice?
Well, one way of looking at it is it's an A to Z of how to bring a private prosecution and factors you should take into account. The most fundamental part of the code, and it mirrors the code for Crown prosecutors, which governs state prosecutions, is looking at whether there is sufficient evidence to bring a charge and whether there is a realistic prospect of conviction. So the Private Prosecutors Association code in some ways mirrors the Crown Prosecution Service code. And by doing that, we seek to ensure that good cases get brought before the courts, but that we advise clients that cases that are weak should not go before the court. Now, of course, right, member of the public is at liberty to disregard a lawyer's advice, but
yes,
the code will also then go on and explain what your responsibilities are in terms of information you have to provide to the defendant, information you have to provide to the court, various ethical considerations. For example, nobody's allowed to mislead the court knowingly. Now, you might not think about that. A lot of our law now is based on a no surprises principle. We're not there to catch people out. We're there to prove a case. So the code sets out effectively a way of going about things and a way of behaving. And I think the importance of the code is that if you've got a lawyer that subscribes to it, or if indeed you as a private individual follow it yourself, then you are much less likely to be criticized for bringing the prosecution or penalized in a financial way for bringing a prosecution.
I think, I'll let you finish that part, because that's probably quite key in terms of trying to protect yourself on a costs order. So I'll let you finish that, and then I'll say my little piece then.
Well, the thing is, Hattie, at the end of any criminal case, one side wins and one side loses, in that there is either a conviction or an acquittal. If you brought the private prosecution and there is an acquittal, the person defending the private prosecution is quite entitled to ask for their costs, because they've been brought before a court, no doubt incurred expense before you think of the worry of being prosecuted. And the court will have to consider whether to award costs to the defendant, and if so, who's going to pay the costs. And there are two options. One is the costs are paid by what's known as central funds, which means you and I as the taxpayer. And the other is the costs are ordered against the prosecution. Now, the reason I say the code for private prosecutors is both so helpful and so important is that if you followed that, it is entirely possible for a court to conclude that it was the right thing to do to bring the prosecution, but the evidence just wasn't there to justify a conviction.
So they're
less likely to award costs against you as a prosecutor if you've behaved properly and ethically than if you've disregarded advice, or you've brought a case that's got no prospect of a conviction whatsoever.
Yes.
You've wasted everybody's time and money.
So let's just put it this way. If you read the code of practice, if you are going into a private prosecution, if you're looking at making an application and issuing an application for a private prosecution, then it's probably important that you do read the code of practice, is what we're saying, Nick, so that you can make sure that you can tick all the boxes of requirements, all the boxes of what you should do if you're bringing a private prosecution, in order that you can limit a potential cost order made against you in the event that you're not successful in your private prosecution. And obviously the judge and a courtroom will have the last say always. But I think that's what we're saying, aren't we? The reason why the code of practice that belongs in the Private Prosecutors Association is important, so that if you are thinking of going down that road, you can read about all the key and important points you should be thinking about, adhering to, and making sure your case fits into that code, right?
Absolutely. And of course, if you bring a private prosecution that is unsuccessful, you aren't going to recover your own costs. You've been unsuccessful, so you will have incurred some cost of bringing the case to court. Now, if you follow the code, the starting point is there a realistic prospect of conviction on the evidence I've got? If the answer's no, you then have a choice. Go away and see if you can find some more evidence, or accept that the realistic prospect of conviction isn't there and look at some other way of solving your dispute.
Yes. And
if you follow the code, actually, you might find you can strengthen your case by considering things that the code tells you to consider and increasing your prospect of conviction. Although ultimately,
Absolutely.
Any case depends on the evidence.
There will be elements of the code of practice that get you thinking in a direction which perhaps you haven't started thinking in order to, as you say, strengthen what you're doing. And if it highlights that actually the way you're bringing your prosecution in terms of the evidence and the facts and the material perhaps could be stronger, you need more of it, the code of practice can potentially give you some direction in that way. So yes, I know the term code of practice and association may not sound that exciting and interesting to people, but I think in this area of law, if you're standing up and saying I'm going to bring a private prosecution, I think it's really important that you look at that and you take the time to read it, particularly if you're not getting legal advice and help, if you're saying no, I'm going to do this myself. Okay, so let's try and explain to people how they would start a private prosecution. So what would be the first stage initially? Let's talk about the first stages.
Well, the first formal stage in any prosecution, Hattie, is what's called laying an information. And that is basically putting a piece of paper in front of a clerk to the magistrates or the magistrates, setting out what offence you say has been committed and by whom. So you can't start a private prosecution for an offence that doesn't exist in law. You can't start a private prosecution against a person who's not subject to the jurisdiction because they're too young. There are age limits for young offenders. You couldn't start a private prosecution for an offence that took place outside of England and Wales, the jurisdiction. So any court has to satisfy itself before they go on to the next stage that the allegation is that there's an offence that's known by law, there's a person that's subject to our jurisdiction, and you also have to set out a little bit about why you say the offence has been committed, so they can satisfy themselves that there is a reason for going ahead and issuing a summons for somebody to attend court to answer the charge.
Right. So that is literally, you go to the court and you can, is there a name for this document? What is this document called? Do we know what this document is called that people have to complete as a first stage?
Well, it's called laying an information. I mean, if I can go back a few minutes in our conversation, Hattie,
yes.
Whilst we've talked about people bringing private prosecutions on their own, and of course they absolutely have that right, I would suggest that, as you've done, seeking legal advice from someone in the Private Prosecution Association would be very sensible, because that lawyer would be able to assist you in drafting the information, putting it before the court in the right form, and taking all the hassle away from you.
Yes, no, indeed. From doing that. I have to say, unless you really know an incredible amount in this area of law, it would be very, very wise to take advice on every stage, including representation, I would say. But, you know, like the law does allow for people to go down this road on their own and do it on their own.
Of course it does. But what the law doesn't differentiate between, Hattie, is, you know, a private individual with no legal qualifications bringing a case and the Crown Prosecution Service bringing a case. There are a set of rules that govern the conduct of criminal trials.
Yes.
And they're the same for everybody, and they have to be the same for everybody. You can't have a lower standard of justice for a private prosecution or a higher standard of justice or different rules, because the defendant is facing a trial regardless of whom the prosecutor is, and the defendant's entitled to be treated exactly the same way regardless of who the prosecutor is. And so a private prosecutor has to comply with the rules the same as anybody else does.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, I'd like to remind our listeners that a private prosecution, if you're successful, the defendant is criminally charged. This isn't civil. So this isn't, the defendant will get a criminal record if they are charged.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so this is a really serious, you know, area of law where if you're bringing a private prosecution against an individual or individuals and they are found guilty of the charge, then it's a criminal offence. It is not a civil offence where you walk out of court as the person, as the defendant, and you just, you know, you've had a civil matter in court and no one really gets to know about it unless you tell people or unless it's reported in the press. You literally walk out. Or if you walk out, I mean, there's a sentence, there could be sentencing attached to it, fines, whatever a court deems, criminal court deems appropriate. But that person will end up, if you're successful, with a criminal record that will affect, in no doubt, the rest of their lives and a lot of areas of their life quite quickly. So,
yes, everything you said is correct there, Hattie, and perhaps one small point but significant point to add is private prosecutions aren't restricted to the magistrate's court only. You can bring a private prosecution for any offence, including offences that can only be tried in the Crown Court by a judge and jury. And those are the kind of offences that are likely to end up with custodial sentences. So private prosecutions can and do end up in the Crown Court.
Goodness gracious me. I mean, yes, I have to say, I'm a little bit astonished, actually, that our legal system allows for people to bring private prosecutions with no legal assistance. I'm a little bit astonished at that, Nick, because surely that can't be right, you know, because somebody, you know, could decide to bring a, you know, private prosecution to prosecute you, and you get this criminal record. If obviously you've done something wrong and you're found guilty, surely you've got to have, you know, legal support in doing that. It just seems too big and serious for it. Not that areas of law are not serious, they are serious, but do you see what I'm trying to say? Surely the court's got to say, right, in any private prosecution you have to have legal help, and if the defendant can qualify for legal aid, or the defendant has to have legal help, because this is, you know, it does have such a profound effect to have a criminal record.
Well, it does, but as we discussed in part one of this podcast, Hattie, which people hopefully will have listened to or are going to listen to, the Crown Prosecution Service as an organisation has only been in existence less than 40 years. And when it was brought into existence, the right to bring private prosecutions was expressly continued by Parliament. You know, historically, private prosecutions were how things happened hundreds of years ago. So Parliament's allowed it. Parliament has allowed for private prosecutors to appear in court without legal assistance. And ultimately, the safeguard for everybody involved is that if there is insufficient evidence, there will be no conviction. And if there's no conviction, there's no criminal record.
Yes. So no, I get it.
If somebody's convicted as the result of a private prosecution, they've been convicted because either magistrates or a jury have considered that person is guilty.
Yes, yes. No, I hear what you're saying. I just think, you know, that it you're talking, yes, of course, civil courts and civil outcomes in civil matters, legal outcomes in civil matters have serious consequences, but criminal outcomes in criminal proceedings are, it kind of ratchets up a bit more in my mind. Okay, we've got time for one more question, Nick. Today has just gone really quickly, to be fair. And I would like to speak about the funding options for private prosecutions. Are there any funding options? Because clearly it's going to cost money. It's a private court action. Any court action costs money. It's just who pays for it. But are there any funding options for the defendant or the person making the application or the person trying to prosecute?
Well, I'm probably less well qualified to talk about the funding options for defendants than I am to talk about the funding options for prosecutors. A defendant's facing a criminal prosecution, I think they'd be treated by the magistrates in exactly the same way as if they were facing a prosecution brought by the Crown Prosecution Service.
Right.
From a prosecutor's point of view, you can go to court, represent yourself as a private prosecutor, and it is costing you no more than your time, unless, of course, the case goes against you and you have a cost order awarded against you, in which case you could end up, in the worst case, paying the costs of the defendant. And if the defendant has hired a lawyer, which would be a sensible thing to do, those costs could be quite significant.
The court what about if the defendant hasn't hired a lawyer and say the state has helped the defendant?
There are still costs involved because the defendant would be able to say, I've had to take time off work to prepare for this hearing. I've had to take time off work to come here today. The court, of course, have incurred costs. And if they think you've been wasting their time, they could impose costs. So, I mean, a private prosecution doesn't come without financial risk. You and I have been talking consistently about the advice that people should consult with a lawyer. And lawyers don't come for free generally. So there will
I don't
be
know
some
much cost. That does come for free, actually, but
No, exactly. I mean, if you wanted tax advice, you'd go to an accountant and they would probably charge you money as well. So, you know, if you bring a private prosecution, it's not something to do lightly and it's not something to do naively, thinking that everything's going to turn out all right in the end and it's not going to cost you money. It could cost you money. But of course, if you have a strong case and your case results in a conviction, then you can apply for your costs in the same way that the Crown Prosecution Service will ask for costs in cases where it's appropriate.
But we're talking about funding options now. Funding options as in if you want to bring a private prosecution, you don't have the money. Are there any known funding options? I mean, litigation finance, we know, exists for civil matters. Does litigation finance exist for private prosecutions? I'm not sure, to be honest.
The short answer is no.
There we are. So there are no funding, unless
you have legal insurance. It covers that sort of thing. But the lowest common denominator, Hattie, you know, a private individual who thinks they want to bring a private prosecution with no legal insurance, there is no state funding to cover that scenario. And in those circumstances, one of your options, as we discussed at the beginning of this podcast, is go to the Crown Prosecution Service and say, why aren't you prosecuting this?
Yes, but then they take conduct of the case. So I think that's very important. They probably will take largely the conduct of the case. I guess if you said to them, well, I will supply with as much as I can, then that would obviously be helpful. But they may not allow you to dip in and out of assisting them with prosecuting if they take complete conduct of it.
Well, you can only have one person running a prosecution.
Yeah.
You know, it follows. But the short answer to your very direct question is, I'm not aware of funding options other than legal insurance or your own pocket.
Legal insurance, which may or may not cover that area of sort of legal action for you. But good. Okay. Well, another informative podcast, Nick, I have to say, with a few surprises there that popped up for me in terms of what the laws are and what they're not. But it's very interesting. So thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the opportunity of taking part.
No, absolutely. And what I will say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you very much for listening. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com